Is it a gadget? Is it a gizmo? No, it's Gadgets and Gizmos with Steve Kaplan and Simon Rose.
Oh, here we are again.
Here we are again, happy as can be.
Yes. I'm just wondering, are we heading off into Bluetooth territory? Are we yet again talking about something that Amazon done? Somebody at Amazon has blown their nose. Steve Kaplan reports.
I was not going to mention the A word for whole of the next half an hour, so you can
sit back,
relax.
That's fantastic.
Well, it might come in. No, it does come in a bit later on, but only as an aside.
So when you say you're not going to mention it, you're going to mention it, but only a little bit.
Just a little bit.
Okay.
Yes.
Well, I suppose they are becoming ubiquitous.
They are indeed.
Takeover of Whole Foods.
Yes, I know. Wasn't that a shock?
For the world.
Yes. Big surprise.
$2 point something billion
they paid for Whole Foods.
Quite a bit. That's just
quite a shopping basket.
Just a
pocket. Do you think someone had to sit and write a cheque for $2.5 billion, or
I don't actually know how it goes.
Type it into a computer and then press OK. And how many times do you think they checked and rechecked that number before pressing enter?
I don't know what you think, in case it went through to our account by mistake. Steve Kaplan wakes up and finds that Amazon paid him $2.6 billion. Well, just popping out. Dear, I'm just going to go and buy a small island somewhere in the Caribbean. Right. So what are we going to talk about?
We're going to talk about our old friends Microsoft. Microsoft have brought out a new keyboard. Now, Microsoft are not really that big on the hardware side. They do the Xbox, of course, and they do various computer mice. But this is their new big keyboard, which they call the new modern keyboard. And the clever thing about this is that it includes a hidden fingerprint scanner. That's how they describe it, a hidden fingerprint scanner. So rather than having to type, you know, Alt, Control, Backspace, Delete, and then type in your password each time you
open
the
computer.
Which,
of course, as Mac users, we find rather hilarious anyway.
They just have to rest their finger on the hidden fingerprint scanner. How do they find the hidden fingerprint scanner? I'll tell you. It is a key located between the Shift key and the Alt keys, and it has a picture of a fingerprint on it.
Okay, so this is almost the same as pressing Alt,
it is.
Delete, whatever.
Not terribly hidden.
No, but then why? I don't understand why call it hidden.
I don't know. It's odd, isn't it?
You think there may actually be people who don't realise that Microsoft is a very large company and wouldn't know that this thing existed.
That's possible. That's also possible.
And judging by what we spoke about last time, how many people have already hacked this?
Well, they haven't actually
hacked people's fingers off.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure that will come. What a dreadful idea! It is wired and Bluetooth, which is a good thing in a keyboard. Windows 10 only, so not for the likes of you and me, and possibly not for the likes of all those people out there who've not updated to Windows 10 because they don't like the look of it.
Or because they work in the NHS.
Or because they work in the NHS, exactly.
Yes. Well. And you're not suggesting then that this is a terribly exciting keyboard, apart from
not
the hidden fingerprint scanner?
Apart from the hidden fingerprint scanner, which
I isn't
think
hidden.
It's not hidden at all. But NHS with their backwards technology, but if you think their technology is backwards, do you remember that Jared Kushner, the son-in-law of the leader of the free world, as he likes to style himself?
The son-in-law also rises.
Oh, very good.
It's not mine.
addressed a bunch of tech leaders, including the CEOs of Apple, Google, Amazon, and indeed Microsoft, last week. And among the things he said to them was this.
The Department of Defense, for example, still uses 8-inch floppy disks on some of its legacy systems. The 1980 Paperwork Reduction Act, designed to make government more efficient, but also established before the government used computers, still has domain over every form published online. This requires a 6-month review and a rigorous interagency process to approve any changes that can be made on a government website, regardless of how minor they are.
Well, wow.
Well, wow. So the 8-inch floppy disks, they precede the 3.5-inch floppy disks, which and they also precede the 5.25-inch floppy disks that came out before that. 8-inch floppy disks came out in 1972, and they were...
This is the sort of the 8-track of the computer world, almost,
well,
or even before that.
The reel-to-reel of the computer world.
Right.
It is extraordinary that they have a capacity of 1.2 megabytes, which in today's terms is not that great. This was even the latest ones. The earlier ones are much less than that. 8-inch floppies, what do they
So we think
on?
This is right, that the Department of Defence has not up to cost. You just say, this makes the NHS look as if they really are whizzy and 21st century.
And the problem, of course, is how you continue to access these things. You may recall, well, you won't recall the publication of the Doomsday Book in 1086, which was even before our time, but you may recall that in 1986...
I do recall.
The BBC decided to do an updated version of it to celebrate its 900th anniversary.
And I know what's coming next. The problem is nobody's got a machine that can play it on anymore.
That's right. That's right. Whereas the original is still there in the British Library and you can go and read it.
Yes, that's true. Now, this is extraordinary. Of course, I'd just say 5 years ago, 10 years ago, 15 years ago, 20 years ago, this was showing that the Defence Departments of the United States were, you know, way out of kilter. However, now, of course, it's probably going to be very difficult for anybody else to hack into these things.
Well, that is true,
or
yes.
Indeed to try and steal them and use them.
Yes.
But it is quite disconcerting.
It is quite disconcerting that they're still, especially the Department of Defence, who you would like to think are rather more up-to-date than that.
Yes. I was going to say
they'll have Mussolini bashed in no time.
You'd like to think they had their finger on the pulse, but yes, sadly, the pulse died.
The pulse
is 20 odd years ago. Well, that is utterly, utterly bizarre.
It is extraordinary, isn't it?
And we think this is correct information.
This comes from the son-in-law of the most powerful man on earth. How could it not be correct? Yes, he wouldn't say it if it wasn't. It's embarrassing enough. He wouldn't say it if it weren't true.
No. Well, I'm amazed.
But anyway, from there, let's get bang up to date with smart meters. Now, I had a smart meter fitted in my home a couple of weeks ago. They sent me a letter saying they wanted to install the smart meter. I said, yes, if you like, go ahead. Mm-hmm. And the man came along and he fitted it. It took about half an hour. And then as he was leaving, he said, oh, here's the remote control. And I said, sure, don't be ridiculous. Who needs a remote control for a electricity meter? And he showed me how it worked. Hmm. And actually, it is very, very interesting. So I turned everything off, apart from, I think, the fridge was still on. And it showed that I was consuming...
Is that a smart fridge that can actually you can access and look at what's inside it when you're not at home?
This is a dumb fridge.
A dumb fridge, OK.
It just keeps food cold.
I'd like to think that you had all the gadgets we've ever talked about.
So would
clearly
I.
Not.
I can assure you I would love to. Sadly, the budget doesn't stretch to that. So, the smart meter, and it showed that I was consuming electricity at a rate of 4p an hour. Mm-hmm. I thought, reasonable, keep a fridge going. I put the kettle on, and that shot up to 46p an hour, instantly. And I thought, so that's how much...
Yes, kettle. You don't tend to have a kettle on for an hour.
No, but you do tend to leave an oven on for an hour. And by the time you put on an oven and then the rings on top, and you can really see exactly, you know, on a minute-by-minute basis, how much electricity you're using. And it can be quite scary.
So I'm not quite sure what the remote control has to do with any of this. Surely you'd find this out anyway.
You see it there in real time. You don't have to go up to the meter, which is in your...
Oh, I see. So the remote control is showing you the display.
Yeah.
Oh, I see. I thought somehow you were adjusting the smart meter.
No, the remote control shows the display. It's a full-colour display on the remote control, and it shows you, you know, how much you've used this week or this month and all kinds of clever things. It doesn't play games yet.
But has it done what presumably the people behind the smart meter operation would like to, which would make you more conscious of how much... You're doing, apart from saying, cor blimey, I didn't believe the kettle used that much, have you actually adjusted your consumption of anything as a result?
I haven't, because it actually made me more conscious of just how cheap electricity is, actually. You know, if you could boil a kettle for an hour for 42p, well, that's pretty good going, isn't it?
Yes, I noticed letters in a newspaper I was reading the other day comparing how much people are spending on their electricity and gas bill to how much they actually consume in terms of alcohol. And they felt that as they were spending more on alcohol than they were on electricity, that it seemed to be a bit of a bargain to actually heat their home or turn the lights on.
So we've been contacted by British Gas, who have given us a lot of advice on how to reduce your consumption costs. Things like...
Don't turn the lights on.
Well, changing your light bulbs for energy-efficient light bulbs, and that certainly makes a vast difference. So in my woodworking shop, my woodworking studio, my woodworking... What, I don't know what you call it, really. Woodshop? Woodworking shop? My garage. It's a garage. And I used to have two big 300-watt floodlights in there, which I've since replaced for five low-energy 15-watt bulbs, and it is much brighter. It is surprising. I have the light exactly where I want it, and it uses a tiny fraction of what I was using before.
Well, I'm intrigued because in the early days of the energy-efficient light bulbs, they really gave out a measly light and also a very odd coloured light.
They've got a lot better.
And as a result, that put me off, and I sort of, you know, just bought in lots of the old-fashioned bulbs, and I'm still working my way through. But you think now they really are much better?
They've got very much better, much warmer light. They don't have that horrible blue cast that makes everyone look dead.
Do you need to look for anything when you're buying them, or are they all pretty much better now?
Oh, there's a half a dozen different kinds of bulb to get.
That throws me out. I don't want too much choice.
In front of the rack, and you just scratch your head.
In the old days, it was clear or pearl.
Yes.
And that was it. But it was, wasn't it?
Not to mention the flickering candle bulbs. Anyway, the other advice they gave was to dry laundry outside when it's sunny.
I know that one.
Boil water in a kettle rather than on the hob.
Anybody do that anymore?
What,
boiling water? Oh, I see. Yes, I do that one.
Don't put hot food in the fridge.
Yes.
Ah. And play board games rather than using a games console. So there you are, kids, playing the latest, you know, Red Dead Redemption 2 on their Xbox. You say, hey, kids, how about a game of Snakes and Ladders instead? I don't know if that one's going to work.
I think it'll work at the Department of Defence.
Because
they can't
play
any computer games on their computers.
They
because
can't.
They're all on them big 8-inch floppy disks.
Yes, extraordinary. So there we go. So smart meters, I think, altogether a good thing. Although, as you have pointed out, when you move, you change your energy supplier, then the smart meters once again become dumb meters.
I believe so. That may be the first generation of smart meters. It may be that the new generation of smart meters are smarter than the other ones. But obviously, given that the government is trying to encourage competition in the market by people switching and driving down prices, clearly if you're going to move and your smart meter doesn't work anymore, then it does become a dumb meter.
It does become a dumb meter. Well, maybe there will be a burgeoning eBay trade in dumb meters.
So, given that anybody who comes to your house until recently has sort of had to go to your kitchen and play around with Alexa, which will then sort of find music, are you now sort of showing anybody who comes your smart meter?
I do. I say, come and look at this. And watch now. I'm going to turn the kettle on. But wait, that's all. I'm going to open the fridge.
Extraordinary.
No, I've got over it now.
Sharing ideas about money. This is Share Radio.
You're listening to Gadgets and Gizmos with the steam-powered Steve Kaplan, technology editor.
And we are on to OFO. You probably haven't heard of OFO, OFO, O-F-O, but if you were Chinese, you would certainly have heard of it, because OFO is a Chinese company who have installed hundreds of thousands of bicycles across China. And these they describe as the Uber for bikes. Okay. And the good news about these is that they are now bringing them to Cambridge as a trial. And the way it works is that you've used the Boris bikes, as Boris likes to call them.
Well,
Santander bikes, as they are now. I think.
Or Sadiq Cycles, as the new mayor might like to call them.
Oh, Sadiq Cycles.
No, I've never used one because I've got my own bike.
You have. But there must be times when you're out and about without your bike in London. You think, I'm here and I want to go there. I could just hop on one of these little bikes and get there.
It hasn't occurred yet, but mainly because I suppose I don't know quite how to use them. But, okay, let's assume that you do. So are they? In what way do they differ from the Boris bike, the Sneak Cycles or the Santander?
Because they are dockless.
Oh.
That you just pick them up where you find them and you leave them wherever you want to go. And they work by your smartphone. So there's a unique number on each bike. You tap that number into your smartphone app and it unlocks the bike for you. And then you then cycle off on it at a rate of 50p per half hour.
Right.
Which is pretty good, I think. And then leave it wherever you end up.
What do you say? Leave it wherever you end up. I mean, I know other towns in the past have tried this thing, particularly places like Cambridge and Oxford, where lots of students use bikes, and they've done it on a sort of honour system. You sort of leave it somewhere, and the problem was lots of bikes were just getting stolen.
Well, these lock themselves.
Okay, but where can you... Just propped up against a building or what?
Yeah,
it sounds
exactly.
to me as if that
just
might be...
literally propped up against a building.
It's a bit anarchic and haphazard, isn't it?
But it works in China. Not the most anarchic of societies.
True.
Yeah.
They have
that's
rather more recourse
people.
to... Yes, well, they have pretty draconian laws as well.
They do. No, that's true. So anyway, they're trying it out in Cambridge. Cambridge, of course, has more cyclists than I think any other city in the UK, certainly proportionally. And so they are really throwing everything they've got at it, and they are going to have 20 bikes at launch.
Not an enormous number.
Not an enormous number, no. So okay. if you want one, you're most unlikely to find one, especially since you have no idea where to look for them.
So even though there's a smartphone app, it doesn't sort of tell you where the nearest bike is because they aren't in racks.
Oh, maybe it does, actually. Maybe it does. That would be a good thing, wouldn't it?
That would be a bit like sort of combining it with geocaching, a hobby I like enormously, which is basically sort of navigating your way to the nearest bike. That would be quite clever.
That would be quite clever.
Yes. Maybe I'll 20 do that. Still doesn't seem many for
the trouble with the docks, you see. I have a friend who lives in Paris, and long before we had the bikes in London, they had the Vélo Libre, the similar thing in Paris. And she lives at the top of a hill, where there is a handy bike rack outside her flat. And so what she does is she goes out in the morning, gets on the bike along with all her neighbours, they cycle into the centre, and then get the metro back. They don't want to cycle back uphill. So every night, fleets of lorries have to go around to the centre of Paris, picking up the bikes and taking them back out to the suburbs. The downside is that if you go later in the day, you go to the way you want to go in the centre, and you go to a dock, and it's full. So you get another one, and that's full as well. And you can spend half an hour cycling around trying to find a bike rack that isn't full of bikes. So from that point of view, this is a much better idea.
And in London, of course, you know, you can see the vans moving the bikes around and trying to make sure they're evenly distributed. Another problem I find, as somebody who has his own bike, as you do, is the fact that a lot of ordinary bike racks have gone to make room for Boris bike racks.
But you can chain up an ordinary bike to any lamppost.
Well, yes, but in the centre of town, frankly, there are an awful lot of people wanting to park their bike and not enough lampposts.
There are a lot of lampposts. You sound like a dog owner. There are plenty of lampposts.
Not enough, I say. Not enough. Yeah, right, okay. What now?
This month sees the 50th anniversary of a momentous event. And let's play a piece of music and to herald it.
I know what the music is, and I think I know what this is going to be about.
I wouldn't have recognised the music, but tell our listeners what this is.
So this is the theme song to, I have to say, rather appalling to think about it now, but a sitcom that was very popular at one time called On the Buses.
That's right.
And the bizarre thing is that when Barclays launched the first ever ATM, they had to get a really big celebrity. This is a big change in the way we use money, and they had to get a really big celebrity to actually cut the ribbon or press the button.
They did.
And Reg Varney, a man who was only ever known for being in On the Buses, was the celebrity that was chosen.
What
am I right?
Choice. He was the ordinary man. He was the man in the street, though, wasn't he? Rather the man on the bus.
Well, the man on the bus.
The man on the Chuck Lafferty on the bus, precisely. Yes. So I guess that's why they chose him. And so it was 50 years ago this month that the first cash machine arrived, which is a long time. I wouldn't have thought it was anywhere near as long ago as that.
I think it's took a while for them to become established because younger listeners may not quite understand that in the old days, actually trying to get money out of a bank meant that you had to go in your lunch hour to a bank.
No, where, to your branch, to your bank.
Oh, yes, to your branch.
If you
branch.
Wanted to go to a different branch, you had to make a special arrangement with
them.
Yes,
that's right, that's right. And not only that, but you would go in your lunch hour, the problem being that a lot of the cashiers would take lunch at the same time, so of that course. Instead of there being five or six cashiers, there were probably only one or two.
That
so there was incredibly
right.
huge. You could spend almost all your lunch hour just trying to get some of your money out of your bank.
Exactly. Exactly.
So they were quite a good innovation, even if we've now got to the stage where it doesn't seem like real money anymore.
Well, you know, ATMs are declining, apparently at a rate of 6% a year, but we still make 2 billion withdrawals a year from these places. So, you know, that's pretty good. There are people looking at new ways of making ATMs more current, building in fingerprint scanners.
Will they be hidden like the Microsoft one?
Possibly not these ones. Having a selfie on your phone. So as you stand there, you have to use an app on your phone to take a selfie to prove that you are who you claim to be. Although, of course, you just held up a photograph, as we know. They're pushing forward. So I think ATMs will be with us for a while yet.
Okay. Well, it's intriguing. Intriguing.
It is. Let's leave banking behind, saving money, and we want to spending it. It's Indiegogo time of the week. Do we get a little fanfare? Thank you for that. Introducing, well, before I tell you what it is, let me tell you the problem that it addresses. You go to the beach. Well, I don't, because I don't like beaches, but you go
to
the beach.
Yeah, yeah.
And you have your phone and you have your keys and you maybe have your wallet, all that stuff with you. And you think, oh, I'll take a refreshing dip in the sea. What do you do with all of those items? Do you bury them in the sand with little X marks the spot drawn on a treasure map so you can find it again?
That is a problem.
It is a problem. Until now. Introducing...
Until now. The words we hear every week.
I know. But I say them in parody. I hope our listeners realise that. The Flex Safe, FlexSafe, is on Indiegogo, raising money now. It is a bag with a flap. And the flap hooks around a railing or a sturdy deck chair or even a beach umbrella or whatever happens to be there, and it locks. So you just wrap it around something, you lock it, it has a three-figure combination lock on it, and you put your stuff in there, you go into the sea, when you come back, the thing will still be there.
Well, except if it's attached to a sturdy deck chair, you could fold up the deck chair and take both of them with you.
You could. Maybe, OK.
There aren't that many things on a beach.
Except,
I like the idea, and certainly I understand the
property. This is the FlexSafe Plus, and the Plus meaning that it includes not only a waterproof solar charger, so you can charge up your phone while you're sunning yourself, but a motion alarm. So if it is moved, the alarm goes off.
OK.
That's a good idea. Don't you think that's a good idea? I think that's a very good idea. Anyway, it comes in two sizes. There's a 9-inch size at $59 or a 12-inch at $89. So let's just translate that into English for you. That's a 23-centimetre size for £46 or a 30-centimetre size for £70. If you want to get one now and you don't care about the motion alarm,
into English, you can go into inches.
You can get the original FlexSafe on Amazon for £40.
Well, that seems interesting. There aren't that many things on a beach that you can fasten anything
really. You see, I showed this to my wife this morning and said, this is rather good. You'd like that, wouldn't you? She said, yes, I'd like that. Get me one. I said, the trouble is, what will you attach it to?
Yes.
And she couldn't actually think of anything. So that's the problem, finding things to attach it to. When you're on a beach, there's nothing there. What people need is a very good kind of sand glue.
Yes, I mean, there are... You know, there are rocks, I suppose, that you use to sort of hold down the ends of your windbreak if you're on a beach in Northumberland, as we used to be. But no, I think that does seem to be a slight problem. But you're right, it addresses a real problem.
It does.
That when you're on a beach, if you all want to go in the water at the same time, what do you do with your
I think
valuables?
If you regularly go to a beach with railings, then the FlexSafe could be the thing for you.
Yes.
There we go. Okay. We'll leave it as that.
Or groins. Probably find somewhere on a groin to attach it.
A groins are a bit too... chunky to wrap something round, aren't they?
Maybe I don't know.
Unless they're groins with a...
The same problem as the Boris bikes and the lampposts.
It is, absolutely.
Too many valuables, too few things to attach. Okay.
Do we have time for something quick?
Yes.
Okay.
Mine's a gin and tonic, please.
We talked about some months ago about a programmable fan that would display text as it rotated.
I remember.
It on the show. Yes.
That was quite
the
good fun.
The trouble with it was that the software that drove it was A, only available in Windows, and B, only in Japanese. So it was actually very, very difficult to program. Introducing the Digoo DGTF111, or to give it its full title...
flows off the tongue.
To give it its full title, the Digoo DGTF111 DIY 6-inch USB LED light metal electrical rotatable clock fan colourful display Bluetooth connect with app control. And if that doesn't tell you everything you need to know, what more is there? So, basically, it's a fan, spins around, multicoloured pictures on it that you can set from your phone. And you can, I think... draw your own pictures, and then they will appear on the fan as it spins.
So you haven't tried it yet. That surprises me. This looks like your sort of gadget.
It does. I've ordered one. It's available from banggood.com. Regular price, about £25. For this week, or maybe next week only, £12.96.
Wow.
You want one, don't you?
Quite,
you know you do. I'll bring mine in and show
I think
you.
I do. Yes, that's exactly it. Try it first. Steve Kaplan, our technology editor, thanks very much indeed. We'll be back with another Gadgets and Gizmos on Share Radio at the same time next week.
Is it a gadget? Is it a gizmo? No, it's Gadgets and Gizmos with Steve Kaplan and Simon Rose.